From the Land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 10th day of January 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. A bit later in the program, Gary Schnittke will be here. He has some interesting thoughts about crop insurance and an article that you'll definitely want to read on the Farm Doc Daily website. Actually, there are two of them there, one from today and then one from last week. We'll talk about last week's article first. We'll get to today's article later in this week here on the Closing Market Report. As we close out our time together on this Tuesday afternoon, we'll discuss the weather forecast too. That with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. The Closing Market Report is a production, of course, of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this 10th day of January. It's a Tuesday afternoon. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, joins us now to talk about what's been happening in Chicago. Thanks, Wayne, for being with us today.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Early this morning, 5 a.m., if my recollection is right, CONAB, who's Brazil's USDA counterpart, released their updated figures and showed that they expect a bigger soybean crop than earlier, something above 103 million metric tons, and that their first crop corn would also be bigger, that mostly on an acreage increase. However, in Chicago, soybeans ignored a lot of that and decided to move higher. Was that driven by weather in South America or some other reason?
Well, I think that we've been sort of shocked here as we, Todd, we started the index fund rebalance yesterday on the close, and of course it followed into today. We saw, you know, we were thinking that they were going to be buying some corn and maybe liquidating some beans, and it's been just the opposite as to some of how that's going on. I think that we are looking at the Argentine bean crop and corn crop and seeing that there's flooding in areas and there's going to be some reduction of crop there. I think that, you know, it just seems that the meal, the oil, and the beans themselves have really found a little footing here this week. It's sort of surprising going into the report on Thursday.
Yeah, so your expectation then was that what happened today was part of a fund rebalancing that we knew would happen, but that it happened in the opposite way of expectations?
Yeah, it was. You know, because we were thinking that, you know, that everybody was basically so short the corn and the wheat and pretty well long the beans that the index funds would probably take the one that was priced cheaper, being the corn and the wheat, for their inflation hedge, and it's the other way around. They're sticking with the oil seeds.
Is there any explanation as to why this happened yet?
Well, not that I can tell you for sure, but, you know, we've got, you know, people reasoning and looking things, but I think that all in all, why, you know, they need to buy some beans. A lot of people like to buy some beans, or farmers like to sell some, and they aren't moving under $10 very well. And, you know, the November beans come back close to $10 on their settlement tonight. And I think you'll see a lot of people, if they can get $10 cash, will be selling some beans in the near future.
Thursday, the United States Department of Agriculture, as you mentioned, will update the crop production report. This will be the final one for the past season, or the 2016-17 crop year, the harvest of last fall for corn and soybeans, and they'll update the WASDE, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand estimates for the month, and also release a wheat acreage report. Which of those numbers will you be watching most closely?
Well, I think the thing that we're going to be watching the closest is what the December 1st stock were, Todd. What's our disappearance and how fast are we moving ahead here with our export business and what do we really have on hand? And that's going to equate back to what the production was minus what we shipped out and see what our, you know, come back to our carryout. But I think the speed at which we've been able to ship this crop out, we could be a little bit shorter of inventory than what some people have thought concerning our usage, because our feed usage has stayed good. Our cattle numbers have stayed up there. Our hog numbers have stayed up there. And I think that we know that our exports have been tremendously good.
And so the grain stocks report will be the one you watch. You mentioned the cattle. They had a good day in Chicago. Why was that?
You know, I think part of it is the demand for cattle has been for beef has been very good. We had a lot better December than what we generally have on the beef. We watched a lot of specials in all the grocery stores. And I heard a lot more people had beef at Christmas time than ham or turkey. But, I mean, all along the way, the cold weather, the up and down, but just the good demand for beef right now has been tremendous.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us. We appreciate you being with us every Tuesday here on the Closing Market Report.
Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist. Gary, last week for the FarmDoc Daily website, you wrote an article about revenue protection and how it's used in the Midwest on corn. It had many charts. Can you tell me a bit about the article and what it's meant to show us?
So if you're looking at corn, and that's what this article did look at, we looked at how many of the acres were insured with RP. RP is a revenue protection. It's a revenue insurance and has a guarantee increase. If we look at counties in North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, southern Minnesota, Iowa, and northern Missouri, most of those counties have well over 90% of their acres insured using RP. So RP, and in fact, most of those counties have over 95%. So in the Western Corn Belt, RP is used very extensively, over 90% of the acres. In the Eastern Corn Belt, a little bit less. And what we see in the Eastern Corn Belt is some substitution to ARP, Area Revenue Protection, which is the county equivalent of RP. So Eastern Corn Belt, for whatever reason, we see more ARP use. But if you add them up together, there's still over 90% of the acres in the Eastern Corn Belt.
Is there any real evidence as to why there's a preference for ARP in the Eastern Corn Belt, or at least in some of the counties?
That's a good question. I personally put it more to the crop insurance companies and agencies in that area. If you look at the major areas where that's sold, for example, in Western Illinois, Diversified really pushed ARP early on. And if you look in another area where a lot of it is sold is in Northern Illinois, in an insurance group called Sylvius was an early innovator of ARP, or GRIP at the time.
So farmers would continue to use those products because they're used to them. Should they continue to use those products?
Both ARP and RP are good products. If you've used them in the past year, I would continue to use them in the future years. ARP has a county insurance, so if you're comfortable using county yields and determining your premium or payments, it's a perfectly good alternative.
I wondered when I was looking at it and thinking about it whether it had, and you're telling me this is not the case, that it was just because there happened to be an insurer in the area that pushed one product over the other. But I was thinking that it might be related to the number of operators that had larger farms in certain areas, and wondered whether Illinois, parts of Indiana, might be a place where there would be producers with much larger farms, and whether they are more likely to use ARP than RP.
Yeah, large producers, particularly if they have all their acres in one county spread out of that county, will find ARP more useful than if you're in a very, section, because one section in a county could be hit much more differently than the county as a whole. Generally, you would look at Western Illinois as having some fairly large producers, and that might fit for them. I'm not sure about Northern Indiana, where you would say that there's that's the case in Northern Indiana.
All right. So how much revenue protection normally do producers take across the Midwest?
So if you're looking, you're buying RP, if you're in the heart of the Corn Belt, Iowa, southern Minnesota, northern and central Illinois, and Indiana, you're going to be taking it at 85 or 80%. That's the average. So if you average all the coverage levels together, it's over 80% in those areas of the world. So if you're in the heart of the Corn Belt, really high coverage levels, 80 to 85%. And if you go to the next tier away from that, it goes down a bit. So southern Illinois uses crop insurance a bit less, or uses lower coverage levels than northern and central Illinois. most likely because of the cost of the product. As we move out of the heart of the Corn Belt, crop insurance costs increase, and there seems to be about a $20 limit there that farmers are willing to pay. If it gets above $20, they're going to cut coverage levels.
And this is indeed the way the insurance product was designed, if I remember correctly, so that those areas that have the least amount of risk generally buy the most crop insurance because the premiums are lower, and the further out you get, the premiums get higher, so you buy less crop insurance.
So as you have more yield risk, which we do have, which we would typically think of Southern Illinois as having more yield risk than Northern Illinois, your premiums will go up with more yield risk. I mean, it's RMA tries to set those premiums so that over time payments equal premiums paid in. So yeah, Southern Illinois, Missouri, and out in areas away from the Corn Belt typically have more risk. So they'll pay more. The other side of that also is that cash rents tend to be much higher relative to returns in northern and central Illinois than in southern Illinois. So that less risk gets traded off in higher cash rents. So we often see so the cash rents being higher probably justify those higher coverage levels as well.
You've instituted a new tool in the fast tool sections of the FarmDoc website. So it's farmdoc.illinois.edu, not FarmDoc Daily, but FarmDoc. Tell me about that tool and what producers can find.
So this is a part of the 2017 Crop Insurance Decision Tool. We have a product use section, and in that section you can make a state choice, a county choice, and then a crop choice, and then it will tell you the percent of acres that are insured with each one of these products by coverage level. We have an example in our last week's FarmDoc Daily for Sangamon County. They used about 66% of their insured acres were insured with RP and 32% with ARP. Add those together and you get over 90%.
So you can go in if you're a producer and say, I wonder what most people are buying in my county, and this really does tell you, or by the state, or whatever area you decide.
Yep, so you can go to your county, your crop, and we actually also, if you want to look at previous, we have, the default is 2016, but you can look back to previous years and see use in previous years' use as well. Below that, there are graphs. There's three graphs which show acres insured, RP use or crop insurance use by crop insurance type, and also coverage level for RP, just to see what's happened over time.
Is it mostly for the curious, or does it have a real benefit?
It's both, mostly for the curious. And also the benefit is that most people have gravitated towards RP and at high coverage levels, either that or ARP. Personally, I think those are pretty good policies, and if you've used them in the past, probably think about using them in the future. And if you're not there, you probably have to question why you're not there and see and justify why you're using the policy that you're using.
Gary, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. On this Tuesday afternoon, let's turn our attention to the agricultural energies and what's been happening there. We're now joined by Stephen Platt. He's at Archer Financial Services out of Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Stephen.
Good afternoon.
Let's start with the price of crude oil. It's again approaching $50, but this time around it's getting there from the top side, not trying to break through to the upside, but heading downward. Why is this happening?
Well, we've seen a lot of questions start to arise over the OPEC production agreement, which came about at the end of November, and is supposed to be effective pretty much now. But once again, you won't really know the true numbers until we move into February and start to get the actual output levels from individual countries out. What we do know, though, is that export levels out of Iraq have picked up to almost record levels in the southern port of Basra, that has raised alarms over their ability to cut their production to significantly down to the levels mandated by the agreement. In addition, we've seen Iranian sales from above ground stocks or floating storage that has also affected the market. The other factor has certainly been the U.S., and Cushing stocks are the major delivery point for WTI, have increased rather sharply over the past few weeks, and that has also caused concern despite the overall decline in crude oil stocks. Offsetting that decline has been the large increases in product inventories of both gasoline and distillate in the current time period. A lot of that might be related to the end of the year, but I generally think that what we're starting to see is some buildup in product stocks in anticipation of a long refinery maintenance period in which we start to shift over to spring gas. And that should help alleviate some of those large product stocks as we draw those inventories down. I do think the market still has some downside potential to move possibly toward the 49 area basis Feb and maybe 50 on the March, about a dollar and a half from where we're at now. I do think the one saving grace for this market is still going to be the demand side. We'll get some good numbers from both OPEC and the IEA, or International Energy Agency, in about a week's time on January 18th and 19th. And that should clarify how quickly we start to draw down the overall inventories for this market.
Hey, thanks for all the information, Stephen.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
That's Stephen Platt. He is with Archer Financial Services out of Chicago. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 10th day of January. Don Day is here. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Tell me about the weather in the United States. Boy, we've got a nice little warm-up going on.
Well, we do. It's been a roller coaster ride here over the last 6 weeks. A lot of alternating patterns of very cold and big warm-ups and sort of back and forth. And I think that's probably what we're going to see here through most of this month of January. It's going to be up and down. So don't get too used to any particular pattern because it's not likely to stay very long.
Speaking of getting used to particular patterns, the folks in California have gotten awfully used to really dry weather, although it's gotten fairly wet. Snowpack is deep, I hear. Can you tell me about conditions in the western part of the United States?
Well, I mean, this is certainly a pattern that we were hoping to see last year with the strong El Nino. And here we are seeing right now a pace of storms hitting the West Coast, where the northern Sierra Nevada snowpack, where the big reservoirs are in California, they are currently running at snow and rain totals that are surpassing the record year of 1982 and 1983. And the outlook for the West Coast, and especially the drought-stricken areas of California, is that the next 4 to 6 weeks, there'll be more of these big storms coming on through. So it's going to end up being a banner precipitation season during their wet season, and just what the doctor ordered. Whether or not it completely erases the drought, we'll see, but there's more on the way.
Does this, because it's in the west and we primarily have westerlies, drive things through the rest of the nation as well?
Well, that's exactly right. Now, the west coast and all of the mountains between here and there going to do a good job of taking away a lot of the precipitation. So by the time they get to the plain states, there's not a lot left. Now, we'll probably see this pattern change as we get into February. Colder weather, more slower moving storms for the nation's midsection will be likely. But until then, it's a very transient weather pattern with these systems moving fairly quickly west to east.
Turn your attention to South America. Give me conditions for both Argentina and in Brazil.
Well, as we look down in the other end of the globe, it's midsummer season now down there. And right now, it's been a pretty decent one when it comes to temperature and precipitation. The outlook for rain in both the key areas of Argentina and Brazil don't look bad. There'll be some dry pockets in Argentina coming on up. Temperature-wise, it is going to get a little bit warm, especially in Argentina. They're looking at one of their warmer stretches of the summer season coming on up, but that doesn't necessarily mean parts dry. There'll be some rain sprinkled in between those warmer temperatures.
Hey, thanks so much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And, of course, Don Day with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Pick us up online, on demand, anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.